telling pre-September. I lean on in the loop to help them unremember.
I was flying on UA-93. That shadow in the footage, it was probably me. I'm the rumor, I'm the doubt, I'm the lie. But you wouldn't stand near me if you didn't want to die. Everything you know is wrong.
Misinformation.
There's a verse missing out of this song.
Misinformation.
Everything you know is wrong.
You're listening to KBOO Portland 90.7 FM. The time is 8:59 a.m. Next up is Fight the Empire.
Well, good morning. This is Fight the Empire. My name is Per Fargering. And let's start off with a question. What is Bitcoin?
You're on.
Okay, well, once again, this is Per Fargering, and the show is Fight the Empire. And like I started to say before, we'll start off with a question. What is Bitcoin mining? As far as I can tell, a Bitcoin is some kind of, we call it cryptocurrency, which to me sounds kind of sort of imaginary, but that's for other people to decide too. And the way you mine it is you solve a puzzle of some kind. And this seems kind of strange to me. In the ordinary world, to earn money, you have to go out and do some work. You have to produce something or other, or sell something or other. And but in Bitcoin mining, you merely solve some kind of a riddle. So maybe Maybe somebody can explain this. What is Bitcoin mining? Our number to call is 503-231-8187. Well, the big story in the news today is Ukraine with sanctions against Russia, and Russia apparently moving against Ukraine. And it's like, in a way, it's to my mind, it's a bit like coming in the middle of a movie. And we're in the middle of the show where a lot of violence and threats are going on, but we haven't come in at the beginning of this story, and maybe a lot of people may not be aware of what the beginning of the story was all about. And actually, you could go back to I guess it was the year 2000, where NATO moved right up to Russia's borders by adding countries that originally had been considered part of Russia's sphere of influence, satellites, if you will. And at that time, voices had warned against doing this. I think it was John Kerry said that he thought that moving NATO up to Russia's borders was a provocative act, and that there was not a good thing to do. Then later on, in the year 2014, a really important thing happened, which has been kind of overlooked with all the latest news, and that was that Ukrainian President Viktor Yanukovych was overthrown. And this happened, thing to keep in mind is that he was elected, he was a president of Ukraine, he was considered friendly to Russia, and he was very strongly opposed by the street protests. Now, what do you think of the street protests? Who these people were out in the streets of Kiev, whether they were rioters or protesters or whatever, they were able to, scare off Yanukovych, because he left office and he went off to Russia. And so he was overthrown by people in the streets. Now, who these people were is a matter of some dispute. You know, whether they were Democrats or just rowdy thugs, that's I've heard it said both ways. And some of these protesters were shot at by snipers in some of the surrounding buildings. Now, who the snipers were is also in dispute. And so this is sort of the background to what is going on in Ukraine right now. And there's an interesting article in Consortium News, which I would highly recommend people to read. Consortium News, I guess it comes out every day, and you get it online, and there are some really good articles there. And there's this one, title of the article is "Questions Abound About the Bucha Massacre," and is written by Joe Loria, who is the editor and publisher of Consortium News. And by the way, like I said, if people do want to call in with a question or a comment, the number is 503-231-8187. I started off the show asking what to me is a bit of a riddle, just what is Bitcoin mining, and why do you mine a piece of currency by solving some kind of a puzzle. And so if people want to answer that, the number is 503-231-8187. But getting back to the Bucha massacre in Ukraine, Joe Loria, in his article in Consortium News, says this, if there were to be a serious probe, one of the first places an investigator would begin is to map out a timeline of events. Last Wednesday, now this article was published April 4th, and apparently it was, which is last Monday, and apparently written over the weekend. But anyway, back to Joe Loria. If there were to be a serious probe, one of the first places an investigator would begin is to map out a timeline of events. Last Wednesday, all Russian forces left Bucha, according to the Russian Defense Ministry. This was confirmed on Thursday by smiling Anatoly Fedoruk, the mayor of Bucha, in a video to the city council Facebook page. A translated post says, quote, "The day of liberation of Bucha. This is announced by Bucha Mayor Anatoly Fedoruk. This day will go down in the glorious history of Bucha and the entire community as a day of liberation by the armed forces of Ukraine from the Russian occupiers." Let me turn the page here.
We have Marcos on the line.
We have somebody on the line. Good morning.
Hey, I didn't mean to interrupt your narrative.
That's okay.
I just to pick up where you left off, or you can continue either way. But as you said, the mayor declared the town to be empty of Russian troops. Then making no mention of any massacre, making no mention of any bodies in the street. Units of the Ukrainian military, it's been said it was the Azov Battalion, quite notorious Nazi group, entered the town after the mayor made his proclamation that the Russians were gone. We're talking about a timeline where the Russians left on March 30th. The next day, the mayor makes his proclamation on March 31st. Mm-hmm. There's roughly a two-day gap where the Ukrainian military enters the town, and then on April 4th or April 3rd, we're hearing reports of a massacre and bodies in the street. It's a very, very curious timeline there.
Mm-hmm.
Russia has now gone to the Security Council asking for an independent forensic investigation of what actually happened in Bucha. They vigorously deny Russian troops being responsible for a massacre. And interestingly enough, Britain, apparently with the compliance of the United States, has denied the Russian request for an independent forensic investigation.
Say that again. What exactly happened?
So Russia is denying responsibility for this massacre and has actually gone to the UN Security Council asking for an investigation. Now, very interestingly, this is not being reported. So even in Democracy Now, they've had two programs now to mention that the Russians are asking for an investigation. No mention. Amy Goodman is essentially repeating Russia responsible for massacre narrative, which is what everybody else is saying. Highly disappointing that you'd expect a little bit more investigation, a little more scrutiny.
Did you say that Britain and the U.S. are opposing an investigation? That's what I was asking.
Yes, that's correct. That they've so far denied the Russian request for an investigation. So highly dubious there. We're now hearing from General Mark Milley, the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff. He's predicting a years-long war. Hillary Clinton, about a week ago or so, was suggesting the Afghanistan model of arming the Mujahideen to fight the Russians, which is what they did in the 90s. I don't know if she's proposing a widespread famine for Ukraine, which is now the current situation, but she was advocating for essentially, she used the word Afghanistan as a model of how to go forward.
Considering what happened in Afghanistan, it's amazing to me that any intelligent person would consider that something to be repeated.
Well, it's intelligent if your aim is simply to destabilize Russia and to kill mm-hmm. Russian soldiers, then it's quite intelligent. It's immoral. We now have President Biden once again reiterating his charge that Putin is a war criminal. Previously, he was advocating for regime change, that Putin has to go. Both of those statements perform a purpose, which is to slam the door shut on any negotiations. It's the best way to make sure that there is no diplomacy is to continuously be threatening and insulting Vladimir Putin. It's a good way to negate any sort of negotiation process. There is an available way out of this, which is to go back, of course, to the Minsk agreements, which you're familiar with.
Tell me what are the important features of the Minsk agreement? I've heard it mentioned a lot, but it might be a good idea to spell out some of the important points.
At the top of the Minsk agreement, the core concern from the Russians was that Ukraine remain neutral, that it not mm-hmm. be part of a hostile military presence, being NATO. That the Russians didn't want to have a NATO base, in effect, on the Russian border, pointing weapons directly at Russia. Mm-hmm. So that's something that could be agreed to, simply to say what apparently Zelensky, I'm interrupting myself, but Zelensky actually asked NATO when they will be granted NATO membership. And they were quietly told, you will never be part of NATO, but the door shall remain open. So for public relations purposes, Ukraine is still a candidate for NATO membership, which is absolutely the red line for Russia.
Mm-hmm.
Zelensky could simply say, no, we're not part of NATO, and satisfy Putin's chief security concern.
I had read that he did say that, but it was very confusing.
Deliberately kept confusing because they want to keep the war going on. They don't mm-hmm. want a resolution. The idea is to bleed Ukraine to the very last Ukrainian fighting the Russians. That seems to be the war planner's agenda. The other thing in the Minsk agreement that's more controversial than simply neutrality is saying that Crimea, which is where the Sevastopol is, the Russian Navy's largest naval base, a warm water port, the only warm water port Russia has, that Crimea would remain part of Russia, which it now in effect is, but that would be simply recognized as such.
Mm-hmm.
And those are the two principal concerns. The other one, which is now an add-on, is that the Donbas region would become part of Russia. These are the Russian-speaking people who have now been under Ukrainian assault for the last 8 years. They've been shelled relentlessly by the Ukrainian army, and 14,000 people have died in that region, mostly Russian-speaking people. So the only difference between the Minsk Accord that would have been that was agreed to 8 years ago and the current proposal is that Russia is actually asking for more than they were asking for originally. They're asking for the recognition of Crimea and the recognition of the areas in the Donbas as being part of Russia.
Well, actually, so Crimea was part of Russia until very recently. I think Crimea was added onto the Russian Empire back around the year 1800 under Catherine the Great, And then in 1954, I think it was given to Ukraine by who was the Russian prime minister at that time. But it was like this is sort of like something that was not in his power to do, but he did it anyway.
Yeah. No, there's no deep history there, and it's mm-hmm. it certainly should be negotiable. Right now, we're in a very strange time in the American media landscape, where you can turn on to Tucker Carlson and hear more dissenting voices than you'll hear on Amy Goodman's program, which is bizarre. I don't like Tucker Carlson. I actually do like Amy Goodman, but mm-hmm. Tucker Carlson has had people such as former Colonel Douglas McGregor, who was working actually in the Trump White House, but is very knowledgeable, very 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 sober minded when it comes to military matters. He's been given space.
Well, to me, this is very interesting. Where there seems to be kind of sort of flip flop going on here. That the ones who seem most eager for some kind of war are the sort of the liberals, the Democrats, the Biden people, and the ones who are opposed are these conservatives like you mentioned, like Tucker Carlson. This seems to me kind of reverses the usual lineup, but go ahead.
Well, very confusing, and very confusing indeed. Something to understand when it comes to where public reaction is, consider that a couple of weeks into the Russian assault, 75% of Americans, according to polling, favored a no-fly zone, without any understanding of what a no-fly zone would actually entail.
Mm-hmm.
So you had a media apparatus that for weeks was supposedly giving information to Americans about what's going on in Ukraine and essentially failed to do the most basic educating of what's at issue, which is what you need in a democracy. You needed an informed public. A no-fly zone, as you and I know, would involve direct American participation. It would be American pilots shooting down Russian pilots starting World War III. That information was never shared with most of the American public.
Mm-hmm.
So right now, if you did a news literacy test on American citizens, you'd find most Americans would fail even after 2 months of relentless coverage of this rather complex issue. It's not that complex. You get it. I get it. But you do have to know some stuff. The coup that happened in 2014 that you mentioned, most Americans don't know this. The fact that it has been a shooting war ever since, most Americans don't know that. The presence of Nazi units within the Ukrainian military is very much marginalized. If it comes up at all, it's being played as Russian propaganda.
That's very interesting. Here we have the Nazi units are the Azov Battalion, and for a long time they had been a kind of an independent military organization. But recently, they were actually incorporated into Ukraine's army.
Yes, and they're the scariest of the bunch. I mean, these are the people that fellow Ukrainians say were threatening them, that were firing on fleeing Ukrainian citizens who were attempting to leave Mariupol, for example. The Azovs didn't want them to leave. The Azovs wanted a large civilian presence that would essentially function as a shield so that Azov military people wouldn't have to face the Russian military fully exposed.
What do you think this is all leading to? Do you have any opinion on that?
The big picture or the short term?
Well, start with the short term and then go on.
The short term is just to antagonize Russia, much mm-hmm. as Zbigniew Brzezinski wanted to use Afghanistan as a way to antagonize Russia, to undermine Russia to draw out Russian forces in a way that would be ultimately detrimental to Russia's interests. I'm going back in time. It was the Soviet Union when Zbigniew Brzezinski was using Afghanistan to bleed the Russians. It's a very cynical project. It has nothing really to do with Ukraine per se. The Ukrainians are being used as cannon fodder. The larger goal, which is actually scarier, is that the regime change people, the neocons, the people that Victoria Nuland represents in Washington, ultimately do want to do a regime change on Russia. And they also want to do something similar to China. So they have a really large appetite for rearranging the pieces on the chessboard, to use Zbigniew Brzezinski's analogy. Nothing is too big for them. And if they risk World War III in the process, that's to quote Madeleine Albright, that's a price worth paying.
Oh boy! Well, you know, before we end this show, I like to bring up one little item, which I think is very interesting. That at one time, Putin actually wanted Russia to join NATO.
That would have been a good thing.
And this is from the UK Guardian from last year, sometime. Vladimir Putin wanted Russia to join NATO, but he did not want his country to have to go through the usual application process. And this is a former Labor Defense Secretary said Putin made it clear at their first meeting that he wanted Russia to be part of Western Europe. And so this is very interesting. The Labor peer recalled an early meeting with Putin, and Putin said, "When are you going to invite us to join NATO?" And Robertson said, "Well, we don't invite people to join, they apply to join." And he said, "Well, we're not standing in line with a lot of countries that don't matter." But anyway, this is very interesting that at one time Putin wanted to, at least said he wanted to be part of the European community.
We have another caller.
We have a caller, another caller. Go ahead, we have a few minutes left. Hello? I think we have another caller. Do we?
We lost him. We lost him.
Hello?
We lost him.
Oh, okay. Well, we had a call with some strange noises, and then the caller kind of disappeared. But anyway, it is very interesting that at one time Putin apparently wanted Russia to be part of NATO. So, getting back to what's going on now, it's do we still have the caller on the line that we talked with before?
No.
No, I guess we don't. Well, it's near the end of the show. If people want to come in with a quick question or comment, the number is 503-231-8187. And so... The thing to keep in mind is that with all this news going on, threats of war, that an elected president, Viktor Yanukovych, he was overthrown back in the year 2014. He was these are the so-called Maidan riots or uprising in the city square in Kiev. And the street protests forced the elected president to quit office and leave the country. So this is when they talk about bringing democracy to Ukraine. At one time they did have democracy, but it was badly damaged, or you might even say sabotaged by street riots, where the elected president Yanukovych was forced to flee. And Yanukovych was considered friendly to Russia, and who was behind the uprising is a matter of some dispute. I've heard different accounts of that. So there we are right now. The latest that I can find out is that the sanctions, we put sanctions on Russia, and apparently they are raising the price of oil. They also, since we are sanctioning Russia, they are turning around and they are sort of putting their own sanctions on the West. And so Russia provides 10% of the West's fertilizer. And so this could be putting sanctions on Russia is not as easy as it may appear to be to some people. I think a lot of people feel that sanctions are something short of war, kind of an easy way out, a way of punishing somebody without actually fighting them. But as we are seeing, that the other party can sanction right back, and it may turn around and harm us. So afraid to say that this situation looks like it's going to keep on going. I don't see any settlement in the future, which I think is pretty grim news. But there it is. But we are at the end of our half hour. This has been Fight the Empire, and we will be back in 2 weeks. Thank you for listening, and stay tuned to KBOO.
Neutrality.